All right, so you see, of course, we continue to study Abraham's life. And as we have said, now turn over to chapter 16, that's where we are. We're going to be looking at that. And we have said that there's ups and downs in Abraham's life, really, so far as his character is concerned. But we really see mostly good as you stop and reflect upon what we have studied so far. It has really been pretty positive, and it is why, as we said in the very beginning, he's one of the great Bible characters. There's a reason for that, and most of his life is just a great demonstration of faith. Romans chapter 4 at verse 12, of course, we need to follow in the steps of our father Abraham's faith. And so mostly it's been good. When he was called out of Mesopotamia, of course, he left his family, his kindred, his country, and just to go to a strange place. He didn't know where he was going, but by faith he obeyed God. And so that was, of course, a positive. He paused a little bit at Haran, but we'll not count that as against him. Some do, and we don't have enough information there. Maybe was under the influence of his father a little bit there. But by faith he continued on into the land of promise. He got into that land with surrounded by heathens, all the Canaanites, and built an altar and worshiped God there. That, of course, showed the faith that he had. And then a little down when he went into Egypt, we talked about that a little bit there, not really instructed to do that, and then lied about Sarai being his wife, claimed it was his sister, even though she is just a half-sister. Deceived Pharaoh and all of that. And so that was a low. But then he recovered very quickly and went, when he left there after that embarrassment, really, rebuked by heathen king, and rightfully so. And so that wasn't good. But he went back to the place, to Bethel, where he was before, and prayed to God and again got back on the right track. And then, of course, the situation with Lot, very positive, and showed his good character, his humility, as those herdsmen began to have strife between them, and he allowed Lot, you recall, to choose where he would dwell. All of that was great leadership, humility, unselfishness. Those are great characteristics. And then when Lot ended up in Sodom and being taken captive, he showed courage and brotherly love and all of that as he went after his nephew and rescued him from Chedorlaomer and all of those allied forces. So all of that very positive. His situation with Melchizedek was a very positive. So as you just run through all of that in your mind, you see that while he's had a low moment or two, mostly we see that he was a great man of faith and has demonstrated all kind of good characteristics. But now we come, of course, to chapter 16, and we have Abraham at a low point once again. And it might be the lowest point that we have of Abraham in the story of his life. And the big problem, as you turn over and see that, of course, it has to do with basically Sarai coming up with a scheme, Sarai's scheme, and Abraham agrees. And the problem, really, that was at the root of the situation in Genesis 16 was a lack of patience. And was there a faith issue? Yes, there may have been, particularly on Sarai's part, but even Abraham. But more than anything else, it was a lack of patience. Because you remember the promise has been given, going back to chapter 12, and that is 10 years in the past. So they have been waiting 10 years for Abraham. The promise was that God was going to make him a great nation. We know there was a threefold promise, of course, but a part of it was that his descendants would be multiplied and he would produce a great nation. Well, now it's 10 years later, and now he's 85. And so Sarai's 10 years younger than he is, and time has passed. And just from a human standpoint, that you understand that that's a long time to wait, isn't it, for a promise. Like if I were to make a promise to you, let's just say if maybe I was a mechanic or something, you had a car you wanted me to work on for you, and I said, oh yeah, I do that. I'm an expert with that, so I can help you out. And you know, in real life, I don't know anything about cars, but it's just an illustration. So I'm going to replace your engine for you, and I promise to do that. It's not your main vehicle; it's just sitting aside. You want to fix it up, and I'm going to help you. And 10 years go by. I haven't touched your engine. You still think I'm going to do it? No, probably not. I haven't even mentioned it. Haven't even brought it up to you. Yeah, I'm not. No, you're probably thinking that's never going to happen. 10 years is a long time. It's not like a week. It's not like a month. 10 years, Abraham. And Sarai as well. Because she's barren. And that, of course, in those days was disgraceful. So she's waiting and waiting and hoping and praying that she'll be able to have children. But 10 years later, she's still barren. And so they basically get tired of waiting. They lose their patience. And one of the greatest characteristics that children of God, that Christians can have, is learning to be patient, to wait on the Lord, and to do things on His timetable. Because He has His own timetable for things. He's not going to do things just because we want Him to. When we pray, we have to have patience. When we're waiting for that prayer to be answered, He's not going to answer it all the time. Sometimes He does, but He's not going to answer it straight away just because you want Him to. And we have to learn to wait. There are several passages that speak of this sort of thing. Wait for the Lord and keep His way. And He will exalt you to inherit the land. You will look on it when the wicked are cut off. Of course, our land is heaven. And if we're going to make it to heaven, we're going to have to wait on the Lord. And we wait on the Lord by patiently living the way He wants us to live. And we wait for the Lord to come back. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord. One of the more popular passages on waiting, Isaiah chapter 40, verse 31. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings of eagles, and they shall run and not be wearied, and they shall walk and not faint. And many other passages that talk about waiting on the Lord. And again, we wait patiently on the Lord to return. We wait on God when we pray. And you might think of some other examples of that. But we're not a very patient people. Human beings aren't very patient just in general. So waiting isn't always easy. And in our society today, over the last several decades with microwaves and all that kind of stuff, and instant popcorn, I think we don't like to wait, do we? Can you imagine waiting for 10 years for a promise to be fulfilled? Well, basically, they kind of ran out of patience waiting on God. And so in the first four verses then, let's just read that. We'll go back and look at it. It says, now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, behold, now the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go in to my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her. And Abraham listened to the voice of Sarai. So after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarai, Abraham's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian, her servant, and gave her to her husband as a wife. And he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And so there you have it. They come up with this plan. And everything about this plan really was wrong. In fact, it was sinful for a couple of different reasons. First of all, just from a moral standpoint, it was wrong. And I understand that in the patriarch period, the moral laws weren't as clear as we have them now, and even as under the law of Moses. But we all understand that what is God's law concerning marriage from the beginning? One husband, one wife, forever. They're to cleave one to another. So we understand that. So So, I mean, no matter how you look at it, this whole scheme, this idea of Sarai giving her husband, her servant, it was morally wrong. Now, it was accepted in those days. It was a common practice when a woman was barren to do this sort of thing. And in fact, it was customary. In some places, it was even law that if the woman, the wife, went in that kind of arrangement, that she would be in control of the child once the child was born. And so Sarah didn't just come up with this out of the blue. It was a customary situation. But just because something is customary doesn't necessarily mean it's right, does it? And you think about this even, you know, sometimes we lose, as we study the Bible and these Bible characters, we lose touch with the humanity of the whole thing, of the human nature involved in the characters. Like Hagar was a real person, just like Abraham and Sarai, and not just someone we're reading about in a book. And she was a real person. And was it right for them? And again, as I said, it was customary, but that doesn't make it right to basically decide for her, hey, you're my servant. You're going to go and have relations with my husband. You think they gave her a choice in that? Well, she was a slave. She was Sarai's slave. That was her. This whole thing is her scheme. So in all of this, that really the one that was innocent in this was Hagar. Now later on, just a minute, we'll read that she had developed her own issue. But so far as this scheme is concerned, she's the only innocent one. It was Sarai's scheme, and Abraham listened to her. And so it was sinful from that standpoint, but again the immorality involved in it. But then it was also sinful from the standpoint that no matter how you view the morality of it, they are overriding God's plan. And they're deciding in their own mind, particularly Sarai decided, this will be a good thing to do. This is a way that I can have a child. And again, at that time, because that was so acceptable, you know, that some of the stigma of being barren would go away with regard to that. But that was her scheme. It wasn't God's scheme. It wasn't God's idea. In fact, I would suggest to you, even though it's not specifically stated, but I would suggest to you that it was always God's will that Abraham would bring forth a child with Sarai. And even as you read this, even Sarai is a little doubtful about this whole situation. Sarah, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, "Behold, now the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go in to my servant. It may be that I shall obtain." Notice, it may be that I may obtain children by her. And she doesn't know that this scheme is going to work. And it's humanly devised. You can't ever have a lot of confidence in a humanly devised scheme. But they're going against God's will in this. I don't know that they're setting out, that they're purposely trying to rebel against God. But the fact of the matter is, this was not God's will. He wanted Abraham to have a child with Sarai. One reason I know that is, why do you think he intervened when they were down in Egypt? Like, that wasn't just because she belonged to Abraham. It was because God wanted her to be Abraham's wife. If that wasn't the case, they could have just moved on. But no. He rescued that situation because Abraham and Sarai together, that was God's will. They were the husband and wife. And I've read several things about people thinking that, and I guess a question may come up, the way she words it here, that she was given Abraham Hagar to be his wife, I think at least. Yes, in verse 3. So Abraham had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarai. Abraham's wife, that's not it. And where does it, verse, Abraham, her husband, as a wife. But that was never really God's will. We can have maybe a debate. She really became more of a concubine more than anything else. But the one thing you never read is God referring to Hagar as Abraham's wife. Ever. He every time she came up and God was doing the speaking, it was always Sarah's servant or Sarah's maiden. It was never, he never referred to her as his, because that wasn't God's plan. As Dale said, God's plan's one woman, one man, one woman for life. So all of this was their idea. And as we stop and think about it, there's several lessons we can learn from this. Let's just, first of all, trust that this has to do with the plan. Just trusting in God's plan. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. Whose understanding was Sarai leaning on? Her own understanding, wasn't she? They're just forgetting about God. Basically, they're trying to help God out. They're thinking, well, you know, they are getting up there in age. As I said a while ago, Abraham is 85 years old now, and more than that, Sarai is 75 and barren. And the promise has been made, and they're thinking, well, this, you know, time is getting away, and so we're going to have to give God a hand. Here's this custom. Maybe this is the way that God wants it to be. And even from Abraham's standpoint, remember, he's been kind of confused about this situation from the start. After some years passed, what did he say? What did he think was going to happen at first? You remember? Who did he think was going to be? Eliezer. That's right. He's trying to figure out, and I'm getting old. There's no way I'm going to have to. This is going to be Eliezer. Well, that didn't work out. So now God told him, you're going to have a son. Your son's going to come from your own body. But now Sarai comes up with this scheme. Okay, maybe so, but it's not going to be by me because I'm past the childbearing age, and so. It's going to have to be someone else. So we'll just give you my servant. That's human reasoning. What weren't they doing? They stopped waiting on God. They stopped waiting on the Lord. Trust. You trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. Of course, Jeremiah 10:23, we're all familiar with. I know, O Lord, that the way of man is not in himself. It is not a man who walks to direct his own steps. That's exactly what they were doing. Directing their own steps. And so we have to be careful about that. Even today, we have to make sure that we follow God's plan and that we do things his way, not leaning on our own understanding. What's wrong with denominationalism? Who are they leaning on? Right. They're themselves. They come up with all kinds of schemes and ideas. And I'm going to go through these very quickly. This is one of the problems I have with the social gospel, with brethren even. That they, of course, they're leaning on their own understanding. I can remember some years ago, I preached at a church that had some, they were a liberal church, liberal leaning, and when I preached on some of the issues, you know, that we have that divide us, and I remember talking with the preacher about it. And he made arguments. He said, first of all, he told me probably a lot of people didn't like what I said because they had some people in the audience that had gymnasiums and whatnot and things like that. And then he was a real kind man. But he said, Don, he said, you know, This church was in Memphis, and you know Memphis is a dangerous place. So he said, Don, we have to have a place for our kids, our children, to play. And so we have to, it's too, they can't go to the park. Dangerous out there. And it is dangerous in certain parts of Memphis. You don't, probably wouldn't want to go out and do that. But so his reasoning was, in order for our children to play, to do anything, we have to help in that situation. We're the church, and so we need to have gymnasiums and things. Well, whose understanding is that leaning on? Right. Man, it sounds good. And when you take the morality situation out of Sarah's proposal, that sounded good too. But it wasn't God's will. And that's the problem with every aspect of the social gospel. And so we have to stick to the script. And some of these I'll just go by. I'll put them on the screen. Won't even read all of them. I've talked about some of these things as I've preached over the years on the social gospel. The church in Buffalo that has a Subway restaurant built into it. The church in Michigan here. You just notice some of the things that they did. A tattoo parlor that they had. Space for wrestling and auto repair. And I mean, it just goes on. It goes on and on. A church there in Louisville, you notice that the Sunday nights on tab at Flanagan's, and like it just goes down and down. And then this fella here, I think I mentioned to someone here not too long ago, this situation, Canines at Covenant. He would turn God's house into a doghouse. They have a worship period for their pets, and it. Go, it's just ridiculous. Here, you know, that's so ridiculous. You think, well, no one ever does that. Well, listen to this. A religious professor at Southwestern University in Texas recently conducted a survey that revealed more than 500 churches that conduct blessing services for pets. Like, if I can't remember now, I went through it too quickly, but I believe that other church, it was either in Boston or, but it may have been, anybody read that? Was it in California? I think it was. Of course it was, but I think there's one in Massachusetts as well. But here, this fella saw that happening. He did some research and found out there's over, and this, I don't know what the date, this at least 10 years old, and over 500 churches having services for their pets. Like 500 is quite a lot. I mean, that this isn't something that just happened in one or two places. 500 churches has services for their pets. Well, that's all I could put PowerPoint after PowerPoint up there. Many of brethren, like these are denominations, but brethren, what happens is brethren see this and they follow suit and they copy almost everything that you see in these denominational churches. They may not go this far, but they'll feed into the fun and frolic and all of that, and so it's all the same thing. It's man leaning on his own understanding, trying to direct his own steps. Go ahead, Fred. Oh, he did, really? Yeah. Well, that just and listen. There's no question that we love our animals, don't we? We love our dogs. Nothing wrong with that. Until you start dressing them up. Don't want to make you mad, but hey, you can go a little bit too far. But we, you know, we love our dogs. But you can just go too far. Religiously, why in the world would you have, I mean, their services are just like this, but they just take, the way I understand it, they just stop and take like 20 minutes out of their services to allow their pets to worship. Like, that's bizarre. But when you open that door just a little bit, it gets wider and wider. And the point I was going to make is brethren wouldn't go this far, but they couldn't condemn something like this. Because once you let one thing in, then it's just a matter of degree. So, yeah.
I was thinking about what you're talking about there. The issues of people always justify what they want.
Right.
Like the old, back in the 40s and 50s, the orphanage homes. Old folks' homes.
Right.
People justify, well, there's a need for that, just like this fellow in Memphis.
Right.
You know, but you know what? It goes all the way back to Sarah.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, that, you know, it's always been.
Yes.
People justify all kinds of things.
That's right. And as we go through this, look at just some of these things quickly and we'll move on. Temptation, it's just another lesson. These are just lessons we can learn from this. Temptation may come from close associates. Got to be careful, don't we? Like Abraham, this was not Abraham's idea. But he went along with it, didn't he? In fact, I would argue with you that Sarah was probably the only person on earth that could get Abraham to do what he did. Don't you think? There was probably no one else that could get Abraham. I mean, so far as we know, again, Abraham was a great man, a man of faith, a morally upright man. Nobody could have convinced him to go into Hagar except for Sarah. Now, when Sarah says it, then he just went along with it. And that you got to be careful about that. Listen, husband and wives, we all have to be careful. Who are we closest to on earth? Other, you know, so far as physical relationships are concerned, our spouse. The way it should be, anyway. But you have to be careful about that. I think I've told you many times, at least a few times before. Janice told me, I can't remember when it was, but right when I started preaching, that if I go crazy, I'm going alone. You know, if I go off on something. And I've often thought about, I know preachers who have left the faith and got into something and their wives go with them. That's a difficult situation, don't you think? You know, that's a real difficult situation. And I wonder sometimes, does she go along? Does she believe what he's getting into? Or, you know, but we got to be careful. That's why who we marry is important, isn't it? And it can go both ways, too. So I think I saw a hand. Sam, yeah, go ahead. Right, exactly. That's exactly what happened. And we make jokes about that sometimes, you know, and say it, you know, a little sarcastically, and we shouldn't. And because, again, there's wives that just go along with their husbands, and there's a whole lot of husbands that, like this is the case here before us, that just go along with their wives. And the danger is the relationship is so close, we can forget. God comes first before everybody, even our spouse, even our children. No matter who it is, God comes first. And Abraham forgot about that. And so when Sarah comes up with this scheme, he just agrees. It wasn't right, but he just agrees with it. He probably losing some patience himself, but he goes along with it. And he, as the head of that household, he should have put a stop to the whole thing right away. But he didn't. You got to be careful where it might come from. Evil often dresses up innocently. When you go back over there to Genesis chapter 16, it's kind of surprising with these translations here. You see where it says, behold now, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my servant. It may be that I can obtain children by her. That second part there where it says, I may obtain children. That the Hebrew word for children there means to build. And that kind of surprised me when I looked at that. You know, but some translations have Sarah saying, perhaps I can build him a family. We'll read like that because the Hebrew word literally means build. And when you dress it up like that, it doesn't sound so bad. I just want to give you a family. All men want a family. But you dress things, we have to be careful how things are dressed up. Evil sometimes will look real good and sound convincing. So when you think about this whole scheme, well, all right, we're getting old and maybe Abraham was thinking, this is it, maybe this is the way. Now I know it has to be a child from my own body. We already covered that. But time is going on. 10 years have passed. Maybe this is what God wants. And it would still be you know, Ishmael was still from Abraham's body, wasn't he? Say, no. But you can, really begin to convince yourself of things instead of just being patient and waiting on the Lord. And, of course, the end does not justify the means is we need to understand. And we can make a lot of applications of that, the social gospel. Once again, lying, is there any good time to lie? You know, we're all just all kind of issues that we could talk about with people concluding the end justifies the means, as long as it turns out. And when you look at this, as you begin to read it, it looked like at first the plan was working because she conceived. But then that's when, of course, the problems come. But the point of it is, sometimes it looks like a man-made idea might work, but that doesn't matter. The end doesn't justify the means, so it doesn't matter how it turns out. Some people think there's different philosophies that think that as long as something turns out in the end, doesn't matter how you really got there. As long as it turns out in the end, it was a good thing. And no, you have to know better than that. Look at verses 4 through 6, and it says, and so and he went in the second part of verse 4. We'll just read the whole verse. And he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. You know why? Because she was a human being. These are real characters. Here's a woman who's a slave. And you just think about, you think Hagar has had an easy life? Where'd she come from? Egypt. And so she was a slave in Egypt. Now she's moved, and all of a sudden she, because Pharaoh wanted to, gave her as a gift to Abraham. Like, how would you like to be Hagar and have that kind of life? You're not in control of yourself at all. You're the property of other people. And that's, hey, but now all of a sudden, so now she is forced to sleep with Abraham, because that's what Sarai wanted. But guess what happens? She very quickly conceives. And now, are you surprised that she now despises Sarai? She's thinking, God favors me more than you, or even more than that, Abraham. Listen, she's thinking her son is going to be the heir of all of Abraham's things. If you thought as you read this that she wouldn't have a little bit of attitude towards Sarai, you would be naive. But Sarai didn't like that at all. Sarai didn't anticipate all of that, because she just came up with a scheme. She didn't think about the human emotion involved in it and just the things that come out of that sort of thing. Sin always leads to trouble. And so it is with Sarai and Abraham even. So it says she looked with contempt on her mistress. And Sarai said to Abram, may the wrong done to me be on you. And that's worded differently in different translations. Basically, she's saying, this wrong that's happened to me is your fault. Like, really? Did you forget this was your idea? And she did. And this is what happens, again, when you turn away, you begin to walk by sight. And first of all, she blamed God, didn't she? It's God. You haven't given me children, so I have to come up with this scheme. And then now it looked like it was going to work out, but now she's despised by Hagar, and now she's upset with Abraham. So now there's friction in the home. What happens when we in our marriages we stop operating according to God's will, and we start just doing things our own way, and we don't stay in the roles that God has given us. We don't live the way God wants us to live. What happens in the home? Friction. Right. Just problem, divorce, so on. And one of the things about Abraham's life that I've always appreciated that we don't have is we don't have all of the details. Like the same thing when he offers up Isaac. You know, we just get a little glimpse of what really happened. But you know, these are real people with real emotions. There was trouble in Abraham's home right now. There was marital problems. So, yeah. Yes, I think so. I'm not sure about that, but that does ring a bell.
Look how many people bought into that. I mean, people,
right.
That was really a popular book back then.
Yes.
And you don't hear about it anymore, but people still did. And I thought, actually, Sarah applied that in her life.
Yeah, that's exactly what that was.
You know, but there again, people justify. We see it all the time, all the way in the church today, and we know the people of the world are going to do it, you know.
Right.
But people in the church doing it and justifying themselves in what they do.
Yeah.
That's a scary.
It is. But most things in the world creep into the church. And that's true, again, as I said earlier, with the social gospel, but it's true even with other things as well. Things in the world, someone is going to try to get it into the church. And that's why churches have to be strong and make a stand and just stand for the truth. Don't let that sort of thing happen. But the danger is always there. And so this really ended up with a problem and with problems for everybody. Sarai's unhappy now because she's despised by Hagar. And eventually Hagar is so troubled by Sarai, what does she have to do? She has to leave. We don't know the details of that. We're never told the details of that. But Sarai must have been really mistreating her to get her to flee out into the dangerous territory. That was a terrible situation there, a very dangerous situation. Abraham's not happy. His wife is giving him problems now. And there's friction. Sin messes things up for everybody. And so we'll see how this plays out here on the week after next. Remember, next week, of course, will be our meeting. So we'll pick it up in 2 weeks.